Where do you see your career in 10 years? What are you doing now to help you get there? The sooner you start enhancing your skills, the sooner you'll be ready. That's why AARP has reskilling courses in a variety of categories like marketing and management to help your income live as long as you do.
That's right. AARP has a bevy of free skill building courses for you to choose from because the steps that you choose to take today will help you to love what you do in the future. And that's why the younger you are, the more you need AARP. Learn more at aarp.org/skills. In recent weeks, we've really focused on some ways that listeners can boost their income. So whether that's through starting your own side business and growing your network like Hala talked about, or when we talked with local realtor Alan about diving into investing in real estate, well, what better way to test the waters? While you are away, your home could also earn extra income.
That's right. Your empty space could be an Airbnb while you're traveling, because that's all you need to become an Airbnb host. It's a lot easier than you think, and you don't need to Airbnb your entire house. You could just host your extra spare room. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Supercharge your work decks with AI-powered Canva presentations. All you do is start with a prompt. You describe your presentation in a few words, and Canva presentations will generate captivating slides that you can then customize in seconds.
Canva presentations are designed for every workplace and every department. Whether you work in sales, marketing, HR, ops, and more, Canva presentations can generate any deck you want for work. Sales decks, marketing presentations, onboarding plans, you name it. Any department can save time on any presentation with AI.
Generate slides in seconds with Canva presentations at canva.com. Designed for work.
You know that feeling when you walk into your home, take a deep breath, and feel new? Well, that's what it's like to use Clorox Scentiva. Because Clorox Scentiva smells like coconut, cleans like Clorox, and feels like energy. It'll elevate any cleaning routine to not just clean, but also make every room smell like a tropical coconut getaway. Discover how Clorox Scentiva's powerful clean and refreshing scents can transform your space. Get yours in coconut or other fabulous scents at a nearby retail store.
Welcome to How to Money. I'm Joel.
And I am Matt.
And today, we're answering your listener questions.
That's right, Joel. This is a Listener Question Monday episode where we are going to get to five excellent questions from listeners. We've got a listener who's wondering if he should be paying off his student loans or instead taking that money and sticking it in the market. He's talking about potentially investing that money. We've got somebody else who's thinking about getting a degree in counseling to get rich. We've got some good thoughts to share on that one. And another listener has...
That's a real reason to do any profession.
It's just to get rich. But somebody else, they're considering the strategy of going with an RV instead of a traditional home in order to cut back on some of their expenses to find a place to live. And so we are going to share our thoughts on that one as well. Plus two other questions. Looking forward to all of them today.
Well, yes, we are. And that truly is not a good reason to go into basically any profession. I guess maybe some people go into Wall Street in order to, it's basically just for the money. But then you see those stories about people working 100 hours a week. And I'm like, sounds like it's not worth really almost any salary you could pay me.
That is true.
All right, before we get to that, Matt, I wanted to mention really quickly something that I had heard existed, but it's not something that I had really taken advantage of. And it's the fact that when you buy something, of course, at Costco, you can go back if there's a price drop. Like it's like this worst feeling in the world for me when I bought something the last time and then I see the new catalog and I'm like, oh man, I think it's $5 off this month. I screwed up. I should have waited. But no, you don't have to wait. If it's within 30 days of that price drop, you can literally just go to customer service and get a refund and say, listen, can you look that up in my membership?
Straight up refund.
Exactly.
And they've got record of it because, yeah, you are a member. You got to scan that card.
That's right.
They know everything about you.
You don't even need like...
they know all of your Costco shopping history.
Right. You don't need the physical receipt. It's literally just on the record of things you purchased. Yeah. So it makes it super simple. And it's something I hadn't really taken advantage of. And I knew existed, I guess, maybe, I don't know, a year or two, a couple years ago, I found out about this.
Have you...
I took advantage of it.
You
the first time.
Oh, you did?
Yeah.
What was the item?
Okay, so it was
I'm sure the item.
What, like a beach shirt, whatever you call them, the SPF shirts.
Oh, yeah.
For the beach. It was like, which I bought it for like $13 and then went on sale for like $9.99, and so it was like $3. And
so is it frugal or cheap that we're even talking about this?
Well, then there was one other thing on that purchase. I'm trying to remember what it was, but maybe
that also went down in price?
Kitty litter or something. I don't know. Okay. Something else that was on that I was like, oh, now it's $5 off, and I didn't get that. So when it was 2 for 1, yeah. And I had to return something else, actually, so it was like all three at the same time. But
I mean, it's not, of course, you're going to be going back into Costco at some point anyway, right. So you just got to keep that running tally.
I wouldn't make a trip there.
List. Yeah. Well, plus maybe you're probably going there as well, just to maybe to fill up the van, maybe
get a hot dog.
Yeah, or get a gross hot dog, whatever. The opposite end of the spectrum, dude, we recently bought some lights. Fancy West Elm lights that didn't work out at the new place. And we didn't pay attention to the fact that items that they sell that end in 97 cents, this mm-hmm. is at West Elm, they're final sale items,
ooh.
Which means you can't return those.
Losers weepers.
Exactly. So we're like, all right, well, they match the other lights. We got the wrong kind of light. And so we're looking at other places in the house where we can hang these stupid things. But, but we might end up eating some of that cost and selling it as a used, you know, but new, unopened product.
Okay.
Maybe on Facebook Marketplace or something like that.
Someone will want that.
But you got to watch out for those things. Like different retailers have different rules, in particular,
right.
Even when it comes to returns. And this is something that
final
we can't even...
Final sale products.
Can't even return,
yeah.
And I was shocked to see that. That's definitely not something Costco would do. Costco and West Elm, they're different beasts,
yeah.
For sure.
And West Elm sells nice stuff, but knowing that return policy is really important, because if it doesn't work out, like, it looks great in the pictures on the internet, then you get it in person, you're like, ooh, it's either smaller than you thought, or it doesn't quite fit the space the way you wanted to.
We made this purchase in a rush. Neither Kate nor I were in a good headspace in the moment, and
moving will do that to you.
Moving will definitely do that to you. And this is back when I was kind of in the midst of my COVID, and Kate also had it as well. Uh-oh. And so I think we kind of had some of that fog,
COVID brain fog,
some of that COVID brain fog going on, because we're looking back now and we're thinking to ourselves, how did that get past us? How did we not see that this was a plug-in light and we were looking for something that was wired?
Uh-huh.
So that's the situation we are currently in. But
we all make mistakes.
Definitely great to know about the Costco thing as well. And one of the things I'm looking forward to from living out here in the burbs is being closer to a Costco and actually going to one here in Atlanta in person, which I have yet to do.
Well, if you want, you know, once a week we can do How to Money lunches at Costco.
I'm not a big fan of hot dogs.
Yeah.
You always mention the $1.50 hot dog Pepsi combo
or
whatever.
My kids put them away. They plow through them.
Yeah, but hot dogs are just kind of gross, man. Like nitrates and pork, beef byproduct.
Well, the Costco ones are better than most, I will say. There's a lot of crummy hot dogs out there, but they're at least decent hot dogs. So
yeah, they're the top of the heap.
I won't force them on you though. all right, let's mention the beer that we're having on this episode, and then get on to some questions. This one is called Kolsch. It's by Blaze Brewing, and
not surprisingly, this is a stout. No, it's a Kolsch style.
It's a Kolsch.
Yeah.
And it's funny because there's no real name to this one. Usually, craft brewers make inventive names for their beers.
They get a little creative with it.
Just straight up Kolsch.
Right on the nose.
So we'll give our thoughts on this one at the end of the episode. But let's get on to our listener questions, Matt. And for folks out there who want to ask a question of us in an upcoming episode, just go to howtomoney.com/ask. There are simple instructions there for you to be able to record that question and get it our way. And hopefully we can take it on the next Ask HTM episode. But Matt, we've actually got a couple questions from listeners named Adrian in this episode. So
sure. What's that all about?
Yo, Adrian, we're going to bookend this episode with different listeners named Adrian. And this first one comes from an Adrian who is thinking about living in an RV.
Hey, Matt and Joel. My name is Adrian and I'm from Las Cruces, New Mexico. And my partner and I are looking for some advice. So we're wanting to buy a home, but the housing market is not the greatest right now. So we also started looking into buying an RV from a dealership. We then want to get a piece of land where we would put the RV and possibly have a home built. What do you think about our approach? Thanks in advance, and we love the show.
All right, Adrian, you are right. The housing market isn't very good right now, or I should say it's not very good if you're a first-time home buyer. It's a very great market if you are somebody who is thinking about selling your home and just traveling the world maybe for the rest of your life, because you would be in the fortunate situation of not having to pay these sky-high prices, but obviously that's not the situation you're in.
Although the market is starting to mellow out in a lot of places, right?
Yeah, that is the good news, right, is that things are starting to cool down, because for a hot minute... or actually almost maybe a hot 20-ish minutes, because it was about maybe about a year and a half, 20 months, where finding a deal on a home was basically impossible. And so, yeah, no wonder it sounds like you've decided to sort of give up. You've decided maybe to opt out altogether. But yeah, that being said, the tide has shifted some in the housing market because homes are staying on the market longer. We're seeing fewer bidding wars, and even price cuts are starting to happen a bit more regularly. I think a lot of home sellers were maybe out a little too far over their skis and are having to pull back those prices a little bit.
Yeah, well, and those rate increases, right? Those dramatic rate hikes that have been happening have impacted the overall price mechanisms for homes. Like, it's having a major impact, and we've seen rates rising just incredibly rapidly, and of course that is going to have an impact on the affordability level, and then therefore the price that sellers are able to charge. And so let's specifically talk about buying an RV, because there's just a huge difference between buying a home and buying a plot of land and then maybe an RV from an investment point of view, right? Because homes are, you know, looking like the best investment ever in recent years, but aside from just the recent abnormal home price hikes,
even ignoring the past 12 months,
if you're just looking at kind of normal historical home appreciation, you know, owning a home is typically a solid method for slowly building wealth as you pay that mortgage down. Mm-hmm. And it's actually the number one asset that most Americans own, that any, you know, almost all Americans who own a home have more money in home equity than they have in the market. We don't think it's a good thing, but that is
a reality. It's a forced savings and investing method.
Exactly. And so, you know, we're actually much more enthusiastic, Adrian, about you buying a physical single family or multifamily home than we are about you buying some land in an RV, because valuing raw land, that's a particular skill. It's difficult to do.
Well, yeah. Well, so this makes me think of a friend of ours, Joel, who, this is maybe close to 10 years ago.
Oh, yeah.
This is a friend of ours who is a particularly smart dude. Mm-hmm. He is not, he doesn't normally make rash, quick decisions, and he didn't in this case. He's very involved in the community, and so it's not like he was unaware of the steps he needed to take in order to make sure this was a good buy. But he bought a plot of land here in the city to build a home, and it turns out that it was unbuildable. And I think he dropped maybe like $30,000 or $40,000,
something like
it was
not a cheap mistake,
on this chunk of land.
Well, then the city made him build a sidewalk in front of it, so he had to put money into the property even though he couldn't build a house on it.
Well, there's no sidewalks on either of the properties next to him, and so he thought, "Oh, this is stupid. Like, why would I build a sidewalk only in front of, you know, on this piece of land?" And so he actually built a sidewalk somewhere else because the city allowed him to do that. But bottom line, this is a plot of land that was unbuildable, which meant that he was then not able to turn around and sell it as a piece of land that was buildable to someone else. I actually haven't asked him about this, but I think he still owns that piece of property. He's just kind of sitting on it.
I think at some point maybe he can give it away for tax purposes.
Yeah, I'm sure it has gone up in value just because of inflation and property values, just generally speaking. But from the standpoint of using that piece of land to build a home on, that was not something that he was able to do, even with all of the due diligence that he did.
Right. So purchasing raw land is kind of this like fraught endeavor that we would say most people should avoid unless you actually know what you're doing. And so if you're trying to buy a little piece of land to park your RV on, well, there's a chance you might be buying something that's overvalued and that you'll never be able to get your money back out of. Mm-hmm. And, you know, then you're paying taxes annually on it. And so it could just become a drain on your ability to build wealth, you know, unless you're able to really, really do this on the cheap, and it's saving you so much money every month that, you know, that possibility of making a poor decision when it comes to buying that land and that RV, if you're saving so much money that it becomes a slam dunk just doing it for a couple of years, for most folks going in this direction, there's a lot of potential downsides.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, and you mentioned getting an RV from a dealership as well, because, like, I'm not sure if you're referring to getting one new or used, but RVs depreciate dramatically when you drive them off a lot. And the notion of freedom on the open American road, I feel like that gets romanticized. but a lot of folks find out that the day-to-day RV life, that is not actually what they had hoped it would be. And so they often end up selling their RVs after a year or two at a massive loss.
I can say my mother-in-law, that's exactly what happened with her. Yeah. She's like, it sounds great in retirement. That's what we're going to do. Mm-hmm. We're going to get an RV. And they got one and they're like, it's not big enough. And then they got another one. And so it sounds good on paper, but then in reality, you might not be the RV type. And that happens to a lot of folks in this space.
Exactly. Yeah. And so those folks, though, who are making those sales, like, their loss can be your gain. paying if you opt to get a used RV instead of a new one. And so that's one of the ways that you can make this more of a slam dunk decision from a financial standpoint. But if you're looking at a brand new six-figure RV, then, you know, I think you've hitched your wagon to a depreciating asset, not one that typically appreciates over time. So again, from a financial standpoint, this may not be the best move for y'all as you are considering this.
Yeah, that's right. So it's just such a different math equation, right? When you're talking about buying an RV and maybe some land, than it would be if you're buying a home, when there's a lot more predictability when it comes to usability, future value. Even in a time where real estate prices are shifting underneath our feet. And so the numbers are, it's important to think about the numbers and, you know, not just your monthly cost, but the potential depreciation or appreciation of the asset that you're buying. And on top of that, Adrian, it's important to mention that, numbers aside, it's really worth considering this from a lifestyle point of view as well. Because even if you're just planning to use the RV as a mobile home, right? Less of an actual recreational vehicle. There are going to be a lot of trade-offs compared to going with a traditional home, right? Most RVs are, you know, you're looking around 200 to 300 square feet of space. Maybe you're getting one of the big honking ones and you got 400 square feet of space.
But then you're looking at dropping a ton of money, right? Like, right. If you're looking at one of the extra large RVs, that's like a Brooks and Dunn tour bus or something.
We always joked that my mother-in-law's RV was like nicer than our house. It had heated floors and like a king-size bed, and it had like these
king-size bed
under cabinet lighting and stuff. I mean, it was really fancy. It was like leather everything. I mean, it was really nice. And it was better than our house in a lot of ways.
Ceiling made out of leather? Oh my gosh.
Right.
So much just dripping with luxury.
Right. So much of like what kind of RV you're getting and how much money you're going to drop. Well, it's going to influence the decision in a big way,
yeah.
But it's also going to influence how comfortable you feel in this thing that you're going to be living in day to day for potentially years on end. And that's not a whole lot of space, right? You got to be down with kind of the tiny house movement sort of life. And maybe you are, maybe you're not, but it's something you need to consider. Mm-hmm. And you know, maybe you've gone through one of those IKEA showrooms where you see kind of all they can cram into 400 square feet.
Living in 291 square feet.
Right. Yeah. And it looks nice when you're in the IKEA. You're like, yeah, they did a pretty good job. I think I can live in this.
I could do this.
Yeah. But it's going to be drastically different, right, than that same amount of space in a single family home or some sort of like townhome or sure. apartment or something like that. So you're not going to have a garage, right, to store extra outdoor items or even a place to really put a shed or something mm-hmm. like that. And you're not going to have an attic to put your off-season clothes in. I mean, there's just so many trade-offs that are worth considering. And so depending on your life stage, you know, it actually might be more than enough space. But just be sure to think through all those things. Is it going to be conducive for your lifestyle? For how long? How much is it going to cost? Do I even need to buy land? Could I rent somewhere? Or is there someone that I know who would let me park on some of their empty acreage for free? That would potentially tip the scales in a different way.
Yeah.
But if you're talking about literally buying the land, buying an RV that is going to drop in value in a big way, and it might not work for your life for too long, you might want to hold off and keep saving and think more about a traditional single family or multifamily home in, you know, a little bit further off in the future.
Absolutely. If you're only looking at this as a substitute to buying a single family home, then I think it's not a good idea. I think you need to be completely in love with the idea of living in an RV in order to make this work, not only from a financial standpoint, but also from that lifestyle standpoint, for you to actually be happy with the decision for more than like 6 months.
Right. I know myself well enough to know that like it sounds great. Like I can romanticize the idea in my head, but if I actually did it in practicality, I'd go nuts after, I don't know, 3-4 weeks.
You think so? Like, I feel so. If like maybe a decade ago, maybe 15 years ago, I could see Kate and I doing something like, or at least giving something like this a shot. But at this stage in life, there's no freaking way. Like, I know that it would not work for
us. Once you have kids, it honestly sounds like the worst.
A lot more difficult.
I don't know how those families do it. I'm amazed and I'm encouraged by the fact that families out there find joy in being in 300 square feet together. But to me, that just doesn't sound like fun.
I concur. All right, we've got several other questions we're going to get to during this episode. Speaking of kiddos, we're going to talk about 529 plans and how to invest that money, plus several other questions. We'll get to all of those right after this.
Kachava is the all-in-one superfood shake made up of high-quality plant-based nutrients. It's got greens, superfruits, plant proteins, antioxidants, adaptogens, probiotics, and in other words, everything your body craves to feel your best. This is where Kachava really earns their 52,000 plus five-star reviews. It tastes amazing. It's creamy and smooth with just water, and it comes in 5 delicious flavors. You can choose from chocolate, vanilla, chai, matcha, and coconut acai. Cachava is offering How to Money listeners 10% off for a limited time. I've been using Cachava in breakfast smoothies in the morning recently. It's just so nice to pack in a bunch of nutrients early in the AM in a way that's satisfying and energizing. So if you want to optimize your breakfast, your workout shake, be sure to check out Cachava. Just go to cachava.com/howtomoney. That's spelled K-A-C-H-A-V-A, and get 10% off your first order. That's K-A-C-H-A-V-A.com/howtomoney. Asking the right questions can greatly impact your future, especially when it comes to your finances. So, if you're looking for a financial advisor you can trust, certified financial planner professionals are committed to acting in your best interest. They are committed to high ethical standards and even had to pass a rigorous exam before they could become a CFP professional.
They offer financial planning and services that take a more comprehensive view of your financial and personal circumstances and are customized for your needs. Certified financial planner professionals can offer advice on a wide range of issues like reviewing your investment portfolio's allocation, handling an inheritance, rolling over a company retirement plan, building education savings, and so much more.
That's why it's got to be a CFP. Find your CFP professional at letsmakeaplan.org.
If you're listening to this podcast right now and you're a small business owner, listen up. Upswell Marketing would like to remind you that when customers choose your small business, they're actually choosing you. So focus on super serving your existing customers and let Upswell handle the pipeline generation of new leads and customers. They do everything from hyper-targeting best fit prospects through campaign optimization. Upswell Marketing's unique approach includes direct mail, search engine marketing, and social media ads, and has fueled more than 10,000 small business success stories. Upswell specializes in developing customized direct response campaigns and is now offering a no-obligation free assessment of your current marketing strategies. Not to mention, new customers also receive 15% off their first order when they mention that they heard about Upswell on this podcast. For more information, visit upswellmarketing.com. That's upswellmarketing.com.
And now a word from the show sponsors at Betterment. Do you want your money to dream big? Do you want your money to be a total self-starter? Are you annoyed that your money doesn't work hard enough? Don't worry, Betterment is here to help.
Betterment is the automated investing and savings app that makes your money hustle. Their automated technology is built to help maximize returns, meaning when you invest with Betterment, your money can auto-adjust as you get closer to your goal, rebalance if your portfolio gets too far out of line, and your dividends are automatically reinvested. That can increase the potential for compound returns. In other words, your money is breaking a sweat while you can be breaking bread. You'll never picture your money the same way again.
Betterment, the automated investing and savings app that makes your money hustle. Visit Betterment.com to get started. Investing involves risk. Performance is not guaranteed.
All right, we are back. We're going to get to all of those listener questions. And our next one comes from a listener who is wondering about some careers in counseling, not for himself, but specifically for his girlfriend. Let's hear it.
Hey, guys. This is Keith from the Oregon Coast. Really enjoy your show. I've gotten a lot of great money tips over the years. In one of the episodes, you mentioned that one of your wives, I forget which one, was going to counseling school, and my girlfriend is currently getting her master's in counseling. So I'm kind of just curious about the decisions financially in becoming a counselor as opposed to like other careers and what your wife's plan is. Let me know.
Keith, great question. And yeah, I got a bunch of thoughts on this one, but, I actually talked with Emily about this cause I was like, hey,
oh, nice.
I want all your thoughts. And I thought about actually recording her voice and getting her to help answer this question. But, I figured I would just relay some of her best
Joel,
advice.
That's your job, buddy. You talk to the people.
Exactly. Although, you know, they were on not too long ago and they did a good job.
They did a great job.
And by the way, Keith lives on the Oregon coast. We had a buddy who just went out there to play golf and I love the Oregon coast. It is, you can do beach fires there, right? Fires on the beach. And I don't think you can do that in beaches where we
live. Why is it on the west? It seems like you can do that on the west coast more so than on the east coast. Yeah. Like I've never seen like out west, they've got the giant fire pits and stuff like that that are designated for having those fun beach fires.
I don't know.
It's way more more, way more romantic. Yeah, they've romanticized beach life out there more than they have here on the East Coast.
It's also way cold. Like, you got to wear a wetsuit to get in the water. So.
Oh, that's true.
Yeah, but all right, let's move on. Let's talk about Keith's question, and I'll lead off here, Matt, because, yeah, like I said, my wife offered a lot of advice on this one, and she is the one in grad school.
Yep.
She's studying to become a licensed therapist.
It's Emily.
Yes.
Not Kate.
Right. And so if you are looking, and by the way, Matt, this is really one of those careers when you talk about the longevity and the need for this, for more people in this occupation, it's not going to slow down anytime soon. So it's one of those things where job security is basically assured if you're somewhat decent.
I totally agree with that. Yeah.
So it's like being a nurse. Like, they're always in demand. Same thing for licensed therapist professionals. But yeah, the job options are just diverse. And so much of like what direction you go in depends on what you want your work life to look like. Like, you can work for someone else's private practice. Or if you're more entrepreneurial, you can start your own. And that route could be more lucrative, but also more onerous. Makes me think of Matt, like when you're a wedding photographer, and it's one of those things where some people are really good at photography, other people are really good at running their own businesses. Most people aren't great at both. You were one of those rare people who were great at both, but I knew a lot of friends in photography who, they're great at taking pictures, but when it came to running their own business, it's not something they enjoyed, right?
Got it.
Yeah.
There are folks like that out there.
So
you're good at the skill, but you also need to have I don't want to say a love for the books, but you have to be into that part of it as well. And I actually found myself really drawn to that part of owning my own business.
Yeah.
The books, the taxes, insurance, all that kind of crap.
So if your girlfriend, Keith, is kind of into that side of it, like that could be a good fit.
Or Keith, if you are, and
you can help her out.
If y'all think you're going to be together long term, you could potentially be more the admin bookkeeping side of things.
That's right. Let her be the creative and do the creative and therapist side of things. Mm-hmm. And your partner could work in a school setting. That's another place where there's need for mental health professionals. You can be a school counselor. There's always a need for therapists in the social work arena. Coaching is something that therapists often pivot to as well. I met someone who's a life coach the other day at the pool, and this is an arena where a licensed therapist, they can get into kind of that thing. There's so many different directions you can take with this. And so what Emily's going to do, she's not sure yet. She's really kind of trying to figure that out at this point.
She could be a TikTok therapist. She's just sitting there on social media probably the whole time.
Dude, it's amazing. Like, I was looking.
There's folks who do that.
There are people on YouTube who have, who are licensed therapists, and they help other licensed therapists figure out how to do their business and how to cater to clients. And so they're doing less of that.
They're more like business professionals
as
opposed to the actual counseling and therapy.
Yeah. And so one of the things that Emily said is that this degree has just so much versatility. It can take you in a lot of different directions. So much of it depends on where you want to go. And one of the things she highlighted, which I thought made a lot of sense because it rings true for me in my experience as well, is that internships can take you a long way. And so think through the internships that you want to do, the paths that your school offers you to gain experience. Talk to professors about what they've done and their varied interests and the cool ways they've seen people in their space use their degrees in interesting ways. And you're going to find out the kinds of paths that exist and which ones appeal to you more than others.
Yeah, it makes me even think of medicine, right? Like one of my roommates in college knew that he wanted to go into radiology because that was one of the few avenues of being a doctor of medicine that allowed him to have basically 9 to 5 hours. Mm-hmm. And because that is what he grew up with, his dad was actually a radiologist. And so he knew that, well, I want to be able to have a regular standard life like that. I don't want to be on call. I don't want to have to necessarily be working night shifts or multiple shifts back to back, that kind of thing. He wanted to have that traditional lifestyle with that doctor's income. So similarly, you can kind of think through what you want your life to look like. But I think an important thing to recognize as well, Keith, before just straight up pursuing higher education, is what your job and what your income prospects are likely going to be after graduation versus what they are currently. Because stats actually show that a lot of master's degrees don't end up paying off for the folks who get them. There is so much that depends on the specific degree that you pursue. Because something like, I think it's 40% of folks who get a master's degree, they see almost no income bump from it at all. And so with this in mind, keeping that expense to a minimum is important because you don't want to rack up. this new debt obligation, this new payment, not to mention the multi-year process of getting that higher education where you may not be working as much unless you have some numbers to back you up that show that you're likely to increase your earnings in a meaningful way. That is, unless you're financially independent. Maybe if school is just a labor of love for you, then sure, go for it. You can study whatever you want to study.
That's right.
But for the rest of us, for the rest, most folks out there,
folks who are not in Money Gear 7,
you need to think through all of those things.
Yeah.
And so not only does it come down to, I think, the specific degree that you're pursuing, but I think it's also important to point out that it's not like this automatic guarantee to earn you more money just because you get even that higher, you know, that degree, even within counseling. Mm-hmm. I think sometimes folks might think that, well, just, you know, once I get this degree, that's automatically going to mean this kind of income. And like you default, you fall back on that. You rest on that degree maybe a little too much, as opposed to knowing that you are still going to have to get out there and hustle a little bit. It's still going to require pounding the pavement. It's still going to require internships, like Emily mentioned. It's going to require some work, some drive, some initiative on your part. Unless, like, if you're in an academic setting and you know that, like, once you get this degree that you get tenure, or if that means this kind of, maybe that's one of the few scenarios, one of the few instances where just automatically getting a degree is going to equal you receiving higher pay. But
sometimes there's just a pay schedule bump because
exactly,
you got
exactly
an advanced degree, like my friend who's a high school teacher.
Exactly.
He got a master's degree and it literally meant a specific amount increase in his salary.
Yeah.
And so he was like, all right, all that matters is I get this degree and I do it as cheaply as possible because I'm assured more money.
Yeah. But for everybody else, like, it's worth pointing out that it's going to require, like, maybe, I mean, if you're in a, like, a college or a university setting, it could even mean having to get published. And, like, so there is sometimes additional work that comes with that higher degree in order to maintain that higher pay. So just keep that in mind as well. It's not necessarily this automatic increase to your income.
Yeah. Basically, what you're saying, don't assume that more education equals more money. Sometimes it does.
There you go.
Which is great. But you gotta be intentional about it. And just that assumption is not a good plan. But sometimes you are willing to go back to school and pay more money to do something you enjoy more, even if it means less money. And I would say, you know, when it comes to that, you might consider your career more of a calling. And I think that's a totally fine thing too. And
totally.
I think that's the way Emily views this, is that what she's doing is something that she's highly skilled at, just personality-wise, and it's something she's wanted to do her entire life, or at least her entire adult life. Mm-hmm. And it's one of those things where we're like, why have we not done this? It is time. Let's make this happen. And so, I think, you know, she is likely to make a good income one of these days, and that even the financials of it will make sense. Mm-hmm. Paying for this education will lead to, you know, an increased salary beyond what she could have made in the labor force apart from this degree. But it's also true that there are more proven and less time-intensive ways to grow your income. But when it's a calling, you decide to forego that path of making more money more quickly in order to do something that you love. So, mm-hmm. Not everyone gets to do that or even wants to feel that deep of a connection maybe to the work they do. But yeah, for Emily, I just can't imagine anything that's going to suit her better. And I sure hope the same is true for your girlfriend, Keith. And I think it's awesome that you're supporting her, that you're willing to, like, ask a question on her behalf. And yeah, we wish her the best of luck. And hopefully this is something that is not just enjoyable, but also, you know, pays handsomely for her too, while she gets to do something every day that she's deeply connected to.
Totally.
Best of luck to her as she's figuring that stuff out. All right, let's get to the next question. This one is about investing inside of a 529 account.
Hi, Matt and Joel. My name is Trisha. I'm a longtime listener of your podcast. Really enjoy it. Calling you from Southern California, and wanted to ask a question with regard to allocations for a 529 college savings plan and a custodian UTMA, UGMA accounts. We use proceeds from the selling of our house to invest some money in for our daughter, some in a 529 plan and some in a custodial plan. And the 529 is allocated with 67% equities, 27% fixed, and 6% cash. And then custodian is a little bit more risky at 96% equities and 4% cash. I put that in there with the plan to leave it for at least 10 years until my daughter's ready to go to college. But, you know, with the markets as it is, I'm a little bit nervous. Is the right tactic to change my allocations for any of these accounts? Or should I just sit back and wait, let the market do its thing, and stop stressing about it. Any advice that you can offer would be greatly appreciated. We just invested this money and of course this year, and of course we've just been seeing it go down. So curious about your thoughts on that. Thank you.
All right, Trisha, thanks so much for your question. And man, I agree, this is a really tough time to invest a lump sum of money.
Or the beginning of the year was in particular.
Yeah, well, yeah, and, I mean, that's what she said.
But that's what people were saying.
They sold their house.
Like 3, 4, 5 years in a row, they're like,
I know.
All-time highs. I'm so scared to invest a lump sum. But if 5 years ago you were thinking that and you didn't do it, you would have missed out on a lot of gains.
On a lot of growth, exactly. Except for now, this is something that we are experiencing. And so, I think this is a great question about asset allocation, because it's like this is something that lots of folks are thinking about right now because of the market. But the thing is, Trisha, switching things up in the middle of a market downturn is not something that we want you to do. Hopefully there's a reason you chose this particular strategy with what to do with this money and how to invest it. Realizing that a market downturn was a realistic probability, and it sounds like your allocation is smart and reasonable, you know, but that you're just stressing about the fact that it's not doing so hot right now. That is completely understandable, for sure. I get it. But it doesn't mean that you should go tinkering with your allocation and opting for something that's a bit more conservative, or going with some investment choices that may not be quite as risky at this point in time.
Yeah, I agree. And our favorite fund choices, by the way, inside of a 529 plan or an UGMA or UTMA account, like you mentioned, they're typically age-based funds. They get more conservative as your child gets closer to needing the money. Because if you opt for one of those, right, a two-year-old is going to be heavily invested in stocks because they've got a longer time horizon before they'll be tapping those funds. For instance, you know, my two-year-old and my eight-year-old both have small amounts of money inside a 529 plan, but they are, while they're in the same fund, each one is experiencing different returns because of how old they are. And a 15-year-old is going to have basically a more conservative allocation, which means that severe market conditions aren't going to impact their portfolio negatively to the same extent. The worst case scenario basically is tapping funds that were too stock heavy in the middle of a downturn in order to have to pay for school. That's what these age-based plans are trying to prevent. And so for most people, that's the best choice. It doesn't mean though that, because like I'll guarantee you every age-based portfolio, even for that 15-year-old, is down somewhat, right? At this point in time.
It's not performing as well as it did 2 years ago.
Yeah, but it is attempting to lessen the negative impact the closer you get to needing the money.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. And Trisha, you mentioned letting the market just do its thing. And that's actually exactly what you should do right now. It's clearly not fun seeing the market go down on money that you just invested for your daughter. But volatility is a part of the process, even though it's a painful one. And you mentioned, too, that you've got a timeline of at least 10 years. That is key here, because you aren't planning to tap these accounts for a long, long time. And so your allocation makes sense based on when you're likely to need that money to help pay for her schooling. And so stay the course and just try not to pay attention to what's happening in the stock market right now, even though that is difficult for the time being. And I think it's important too to look to history, because when you look at what the market has done, like you can look at the rolling. So you mentioned that you've got a 10 year span of time before you need to tap these funds. And when you look at the rolling 10 year returns from the stock market over the past 100 years, you are looking at your investment being positive, of going up 95% of the time. And so is there a chance that you might have fewer dollars in 10 years? Yes, absolutely. But 95% those are really good odds.
Those are great odds, yeah.
And I would feel personally very comfortable continuing to invest that money.
Yeah, and I like what you said about maybe not paying attention, Matt, during the current kind of market apocalypse, because ignorance is basically bliss for long-term investors.
Well, when you don't need that money.
Yeah, when it's a 10-year plus timeline, paying attention is actually a bad thing, because it can cause you to make decisions that are contrary to the goals that you have. And when you're investing on a long timeline, but you're paying attention to the short-term moves, it can have an emotional impact, and then that can lead to actual reactions that are going to be against your best interest when it comes to long-term wealth building. It's important to mention too that investors should really think through scenarios like what we're going through now when they're picking their asset allocation, because it's obviously not the same thing as actually going through a bear market and seeing your portfolio taking a massive blow in real life, seeing the numbers on the screen drop down significantly. But this is where I would say, and this is coming from an optimist, that being too optimistic can come back to bite you in the butt, because you need a healthy dose of realism when you're picking your asset allocation, when you're choosing what funds you invest in, because it's important to recognize that volatility can make you look like an idiot for months or even years. Even though that's actually the right allocation for you, it can make you look dumb or make you feel stupid. And so, yeah, considering...
But it's okay, because we're all looking kind of stupid right now.
Right. We all look stupid.
When it comes to money that we invested at the beginning of the year.
And again, that's when it comes to looking at history, zooming out. And when you recognize the fact that, well, the market over the past 3 years still is up 30%+, or the market over the last 10 years is still up 220-something%. I mean, when you think about it like that, when you're thinking about the actual timeline that you're on and the history of market returns, and the fact that as a long-term investor, you are inevitably going to see a turnaround, I think that is comfort, at least in a season where volatility feels like you're on shaky ground as an investor. So, Tricia, we would say you're doing the right thing, even though it doesn't feel right in the time. So keep at it, and consider, I would say, you know, if your desire is to grow that money even further, now is a great time to continue to add. It might seem scary to do that,
totally.
But we want to see people buying more when the market's on sale, not doing the opposite, not standing pat. So Matt, let's get to a couple more questions, including one about saving up for a rental property. We'll get to that one right after this break. Cachava is the all-in-one superfood shake made up of high-quality plant-based nutrients. It's got greens, superfruits, plant proteins, antioxidants, adaptogens, probiotics, and in other words, everything your body craves to feel your best. This is where Cachava really earns their 52,000-plus five-star reviews. It tastes amazing. It's creamy and smooth with just water, and it comes in five delicious flavors. You can choose from chocolate, vanilla, chai, matcha, and coconut acai. Cachava is offering How to Money listeners 10% off for a limited time. I've been using Cachava in breakfast smoothies in the morning recently. It's just so nice to pack in a bunch of nutrients early in the AM in a way that's satisfying and energizing. So if you want to optimize your breakfast, your workout shake, be sure to check out Cachava. Just go to Cachava.com/howtomoney. That's spelled K-A-C-H-A-V-A, and get 10% off your first order. That's Cachava.com/howtomoney. Asking the right questions can greatly impact your future, especially when it comes to your finances. So if you're looking for a financial advisor you can trust, certified financial planner professionals are committed to acting in your best interest. They are committed to high ethical standards and even had to pass a rigorous exam before they could become a CFP professional.
They offer financial planning and services that take a more comprehensive view of your financial and personal circumstances and are customized for your needs. Certified financial planner professionals can offer advice on a wide range of issues like reviewing your investment portfolio's allocation, handling an inheritance, rolling over a company retirement plan, building education savings, and so much more.
That's why it's got to be a CFP. Find your CFP professional at letsmakeaplan.org.
If you're listening to this podcast right now and you're a small business owner, listen up. Upswell Marketing would like to remind you that when customers choose your small business, they're actually choosing you. So focus on super serving your existing customers and let Upswell handle the pipeline generation of new leads and customers. They do everything from hyper-targeting best fit prospects through campaign optimization. Upswell Marketing's unique approach includes direct mail, search engine marketing, and social media ads, and has fueled more than 10,000 small business success stories. Upswell specializes in developing customized direct response campaigns and is now offering a no-obligation free assessment of your current marketing strategies. Not to mention, new customers also receive 15% off their first order when they mention that they heard about Upswell on this podcast. For more information, visit upswellmarketing.com. That's upswellmarketing.com.
Joel, longer days and warmer weather, it means our family is spending a lot more time outside. It's great. Like, literally yesterday, I was in the front yard, Kate was in the garden, and I was kicking the soccer ball around with a couple of the kids. I'm loving it. But something else that you can do for your family this spring, shopping for life insurance with Policy Genius as part of your financial planning for the year. Kate and I both have policies in place, and that means we have peace of mind so that if something were to happen to either of us, our family can cover expenses while getting back on our feet.
Yeah, with Policy Genius, you can find life insurance policies that start at just $292 per year for $1 million of coverage. Some options offer same-day approval and avoid unnecessary medical exams. Even if you already have a life insurance policy through work, by the way, it may not have enough protection for your family's needs, and it may not follow you if you leave your job. On top of that, Policy Genius works for you, not the insurance companies. That means they don't have an incentive to recommend one insurer over another, so you can trust their guidance.
That's right. So save time and money and provide your family with a financial safety net using Policy Genius. Head to policygenius.com to get your free life insurance quotes and see how much you could save. That's policygenius.com. That's right. We are back from the break. And let's, like you said, get to that question about saving up for a rental property. It's not only about that, but it's also about semi-retiring. Let's hear it.
Hi, guys. My name is Jessica, and I'm from Orrville, Ohio. I actually lived in Atlanta a couple years ago, so I really enjoy when you guys talk about different parts of Atlanta, because I'm like, oh, hey, I know that place. I've been there. So my question is I'm 35. I'm looking to retire or semi-retire in about 10 years. I am saving up money for a rental property, and I would like to purchase that in about 7 years probably. So I'm wanting to put the money I'm saving for the rental property into an investment. I just opened an account with Vanguard, and I wasn't sure if I should put the money in a Roth IRA or if there is something else I should put it in, since I'm wanting to take it out in about 7 years and then start taking money out for my semi-retirement after that. That's it. Thank you, guys.
All right, Matt, should we wax poetic about Atlanta because Jessica loves it?
I like Atlanta.
Yeah. No, we love it here.
Atlanta's a great place. So we were actually just talking about this recently. I think for a lot of folks who have never spent much time in Atlanta, it's not a great place to visit.
No.
Like, it's got a few things.
If you just end up downtown, you're disappointed.
Or if you just fly through the Atlanta airport, you're like, yeah, Atlanta, what's there to it?
But man, although the plane train is miraculous.
So welcome aboard the plane train. But Atlanta's an awesome place to live, right? I mean, just the cost of living, gas is a little more affordable here. I feel like we've talked a lot recently about getting folks to move to Atlanta. There's a lot of Fortune 500 companies based here in Atlanta.
A
lot of growing
industries. The city. There's trees everywhere.
There's a lot of nature. There's a lot to love about Atlanta. But so Jessica was saying that she likes hearing specific spots. Mm-hmm. So like Ponce City Market, I feel like that's a place that folks have been to.
Piedmont Park is lovely.
That's where we met Josh and Chuck for the first time.
That's
our buddies over at Stuff You Should Know. The iHeart offices are over there. Over on the East Side Beltline.
That's right.
New Realm. That's a brewery.
It's a good place to hop on for a bike ride.
Piedmont Dog Park. How about that? A lot of folks take their dogs over there.
I will say one of the places that's most underrated that everyone should go to when they come visit, Oakland Cemetery.
That's a good spot.
A beautiful place for a stroll or a bike ride. And that's one of my all-time favorite places to go.
A lot of history there. Margaret Mitchell's grave is there as well. So you can go visit that if you're a big fan of literature.
Gone with the Wind. Golf. Bobby Jones also buried there.
Oh, yeah?
So, yeah.
A lot of great spots.
Yeah. All right. Well, let's get on to Jessica's question. And, you know, first off, I got to say, Matt, I love that Jessica kind of stumbled and she said, no, semi-retire. And if you listened to our episode last Wednesday, I'm going to say, like, you know how we feel about retiring all the way. Mm-hmm. And semi-retirement is way more our speed. So I love that she said that because, you know, real estate can actually be a great way to provide a steady cash flow stream that's going to help you plan a bit better for that semi-retirement at the same time.
Should there be a new Third Eye Blind song called Semi-Retired Kind of Life? you can rewrite the lyrics on it.
I still love Third Eye Blind. So I like that Jessica's going in this direction. And early retirees who own rental properties, by the way, speaking of market conditions, like we talked about with the last question, Matt, they're probably feeling a lot better about their situation right now than folks who are just pulling money out of the market that's taken a big hit. There's something about the steady cash flow and the steadier nature of real estate that is particularly beneficial, I would say, for a semi-retired individual retiring much earlier than the age that people normally retire at.
Exactly. I think that's one of the best things about rental real estate because it definitely has elements of a part-time job. It's not purely passive income. We actually talked about that back in episode 353.
That word gets thrown around. Passive income, passive investing.
And a lot of times it's not so passive. It requires, there are varying degrees of passivity. Wait, not
passivity.
Yeah. I threw an extra syllable in there. But it's important to keep in mind how much work, how much time it does involve. But real estate in particular, it also provides monthly cash flow and more stability. And so that's definitely a perk for folks who are inclined towards owning real estate and don't mind managing rental properties. But enough about real estate. Let's talk about investing, which is Jessica's question. Investing that money for the down payment of that rental property down the road. And first, you mentioned that you opened an account with Vanguard. That is a great brokerage to go with. They are one of our favorite low-cost investment companies. And then secondly, too, you mentioned how you have a 7-year timeline, which means that you can and you should be investing those dollars.
Yeah.
Just before the break, we were talking with Tricia about how a 10-year timeline means that there is a good chance that you're going to see that money, that you're going to see positive returns on that money. Guess what? When you look at not just the 10-year, but the 7-year rolling returns, it's virtually the same.
Mm.
You are still looking at around a 95% chance of that money being positive for 7 years. And so there's not much difference between keeping that money invested for 7 years and 10 years, at least historically. Granted, that doesn't mean it's guaranteed to grow within that period of time, but you should take some comfort by looking at history.
Yeah, timelines are one of the most crucial aspects of how you choose the method of investing, right? Because a 7 to 10 year timeline is so different than a 1 year timeline. You shouldn't be investing in all likelihood unless you're a riverboat gambler on a 1 year timeline.
Mm-hmm.
But if you're talking about that 7 to 10 year time frame, there's a really, really, really good chance you're going to see meaningful gains. And so we would say it's worth the risk.
Totally.
And so, you asked too about the Roth IRA. We love Roth IRAs. And so it's really hard for us to recommend against them. But the problem with the Roth IRA for what you're trying to accomplish, Jessica, is that you'll only have access to the contributions you've made over those 7 years when it comes to purchasing that rental property. The gains are going to stay locked away unless you have to pay a 10% penalty in order to pull those gains out early. And we don't want you to do that. So a taxable brokerage account is the best route for you to take with the money that you're looking to grow for this specific purchase.
That's right. Yeah. It's important to point out that you don't want to completely forsake investing within a Roth. Make sure that you are investing for your actual retirement and not just this more near-term goal.
Yeah. You don't want to put all your eggs in the investing for a down payment basket.
Exactly.
Like that's a good idea. That's great for a portion of it. But hopefully, Jessica, you're also putting money in a Roth too.
Exactly. Yep. You want to be diversified in that way. And by the way, 7 years, not only is it a long time to invest in the market, that period of time gives you that nice runway to ensure that you're hopefully going to see those positive returns. But also during that time, we would suggest that you use that time wisely to read about real estate investing. You can listen to some smart folks in the space. Chad Carson's book, his podcast, they are both definitely worth checking out. You can find him at coachcarson.com. And also study the specific market where you're looking to buy that rental property and target a few neighborhoods that you can just focus on incredibly intensely so that when a deal does come on the market, that you have the confidence and the ability to pounce immediately. You want to know when those deals come up. When you have that knowledge and when you are incredibly familiar with a specific market, you might even find that you're able to move sooner than you thought. Like you're saying maybe 7 years, but if you're able to identify a property and you know that you're getting a really good deal, you might be able to have saved a lot of money because you're actually spending maybe a little bit less than you were expecting to.
Yeah, so much of what makes a good real estate investor is familiarity with a small, incredibly infinitesimally small spectrum of where you live, right? And not to say that people don't become good investors from far away, investing in other locales, but still, it takes like a certain obsession with a certain location in order to know when a good deal pops up. Because a 10% off deal on a piece of real estate is a big deal when we're talking about the numbers we're talking about. And so, if you know where you live really, really well, you can succeed in real estate where others might not do as well. So yeah, it's a great time to start familiarizing yourself. Agreed, Matt. All right, so best of luck to you, Jessica. We hope that you are able to invest well for that down payment and get into that rental property maybe even earlier than you hoped. So let's get to our last question of the day. This one comes from listener Adrian. Like I said, Adrian's bookending this one. And this Adrian is looking for some post-graduation money advice.
Hi, Joel and Matt. My name is Adrian, and I live in Chicago, Illinois. I am a recent college grad, and I have a couple of questions for you guys. I was hoping you guys could answer. One being, I'm a year out of college, so I have some money saved up. My goal was to pay off all of my student loan debt before I start really investing. And now, with it being halted, and with, you know, student loan forgiveness, I've just had all of this money that I've been accruing in my savings account. Now, my question to you here is, do you recommend that I pay it off entirely in full right now before I have to start paying interest and start making payments? Or, you know, take this grace period, because I know we still don't need to pay them until kind of end of this fall, to start investing and potentially make more money off just leaving my money in my savings account. So, on top of that, I would love if you can kind of get into, you know, how to even start investing aside from your 401k at work and your Roth IRA. You know, how do I begin my investment journey? I guess that's what's hindering me right now is I don't know what stocks to look into. I don't really know what ETFs to look into. I was hoping you guys can kind of give some things to look into if I'm interested in doing that, how to get started. Thanks, guys.
All right, Adrian, I like your goal to get rid of your debt quickly, but I also love that you're asking this question because paying off your student loans might not be the best option for you right now because of a number of factors that are at play here. And the payment pause on student loans is certainly one of those reasons. And for folks who were going to spend their dollars instead of paying off their student loans, for the more financially reckless folks out there, we would encourage them to put that money towards their debt.
That's right.
Because paying off debt, it's always going to be a better option.
If it's target shopping spree versus paying off student loan debt, we would always opt for paying off student loan debt.
Or buying a Rivian, Joel, right. Like whatever it is that you might be tempted to do right now. That's going to be a better option than just increasing your consumption. We want you to pay down that debt instead. But since it sounds like you want to be super intentional with your money, you want to start investing, we'd actually prefer to see you not paying anything towards those loans until you have to, taking advantage of a governmental blessing, basically, in order to make some additional wealth building progress.
Yep.
This is where those one size fits all rules don't fit everybody, because it comes down to the type of person and what the alternatives are going to be, as to what they would do with that money. And Adrian, it seems like he's got a good head on. And so we're going to say, don't necessarily pay off the student loans.
That's right. And we also don't really know when those payments are actually going to begin, because we've been on this, like,
they're ever
going to
begin.
Right, this perpetual pushback. And so it's hard. I'm hard pressed to tell Adrian to start throwing money at this debt when we don't really know when we're kind of in limbo. And so, you know, right now the start date is set for September 1st, but there are rumors flying, right, that could get pushed back once again. There's, you know, even the maybe unlikely potential for some forgiveness for at least a portion of that debt. Maybe it's just $10,000, but that's still a decent sum of money where if someone handed it to you, you would be pumped, right? That would make big difference in your life. And so it's really, it's just a political football right now. No one knows where it's going to land, but we want you to be prepared for your payments to restart. Although we don't necessarily want you jumping the gun and actually handing over your savings to the Department of Education, right? To start paying down that student loan. We think it would be better to play the arbitrage game and keep a close eye on what the government opts to do with student loan payments first. Don't start attacking this thing with gusto when there are potentially bigger financial fish that you could fry.
Exactly. Yeah, we want you to be prepared to pay, but just don't pay it just yet. And you also asked about investing outside of your 401k, outside of your Roth IRA. And the reason we wanted to bring this up is because most folks honestly don't ever need to invest outside of these two accounts, especially when you're just getting started with things, because taxable brokerage accounts can make sense for folks who are making bank and who want to invest even more for their future, or for folks like we mentioned here earlier too, for folks with medium-term goals. But since the Roth has quite a bit of flexibility when it comes to pulling contributions out, there's probably no need for you to overthink it. And so we would recommend for you to stick with those amazing tax advantage accounts for now, because you're looking at $6,000 that you can contribute to a Roth every year. You're looking at over $20,000. You're looking at $20,500 for a 401k. So, you know, in total here, you're looking at over $26,000 that you can sock away towards your retirement.
That's right.
We don't necessarily want you to consider some of these alternatives until you're maxing these out.
It's like, get the basics first, right? It's kind of like learning how to dribble before you start dunking. And yeah. these are the fundamentals.
But everybody wants to go straight to dunking.
That's right. Everybody does.
That's fun.
But most of us don't have the ups to even ever get there. at least I didn't. Even as a guy who's like 6'6".
Or at least not straight out of college.
I can touch the rim, but like that's about it.
Yeah. I mean, because that's the other thing too, is Adrian talked about, I mean, he's fresh out of school. And man, if you have a job where you should be considering investing outside of these tax advantage accounts as well, then more power to you.
You're either a high earner or an incredible saver, or probably both, right?
Yeah, exactly.
So most folks
don't have to consider that. But if that's the case, then sure, absolutely.
More power to you, for sure. And let's talk about maybe the funds, right, inside of those accounts, Matt, because that's a question that Adrian asked as well. And so the 401k and the Roth, they're basically the vehicles that we're talking about. And mm-hmm. then the passengers inside of the vehicle are the funds that he chooses. And he brought up single stocks, he brought up ETFs, he expressed maybe some confusion about what direction to go in when it comes to those. Well, we talked in depth about our stance on single stocks back in episode 497. Adrian, TLDR, we don't want you investing in single stocks at all. We want you to kick those passengers out of the vehicle. Those are the ne'er-do-wells who are going to try to play crappy music. And,
those are the passengers that are going to reach for the wheel and just wreck the whole car.
Right. Exactly. So we don't want them present. We prefer for you to
go
with
wreck your portfolio.
The more cordial passengers that are going to do well for you over the years. And we think that means investing in the overall stock market instead. And to throw out a few of our favorite funds, Vanguard's VU, Fidelity's FZ Rocks. We'll link to these in the show notes. They're two of the best in the business because they're highly diversified. The costs are incredibly low. Opening up a Roth with either Vanguard or Fidelity and starting to invest in those funds in particular, at least initially, is a recipe for long-term wealth building. You really don't have to overthink it. You don't have to do much beyond just diversifying with one fund. And eventually, some folks might want to diversify further. But especially in those early days of your investing journey, there's no need to go beyond this simple formula.
That's right. Yeah. And going back to your student loans, Adrian, like my guess is that the interest rate on your student loans probably isn't all that bad. And so even if payments resume, you still might want to just kind of, you know, pay them off as agreed if, say, they're in that 4% range, because that'll allow you to keep investing. And by the way, now is a killer time for you to be investing because the stock market is on sale. It's only going to propel you forward in your journey to grow your money, to grow your net worth. And as you continue to invest, I think in the 3, 5, 7 years from now, we're going to look back at the period of time that that we've seen with the market in bear market territory, and we're going to have thought to ourselves, man, I wish I would have had more money on hand to be able to invest during that period, because we have seen the market, maybe not that V-shaped recovery like we saw back in 2020, but because we have seen it rebound some, that is what history is telling us we should expect, but obviously only the future will tell.
Yeah, still a buying opportunity. I look back to those early years when I was first employed and socking away small amounts of money in a 401k, and I'm glad I was doing it, but I'm like, man, I probably could have done a little bit more, just a little bit more, and it would have a big impact on, you know, where my investments would be mm-hmm. today. But I mean, you know, not looking back with regret or anything. I'm just saying, like, when you're young, that's the perfect time. When you're young in a bear market, that's the perfect time to be doing more, and maybe accentuating your investing and putting a bigger priority, a higher priority on it.
That's right. Well, dude, you want to get back to the beer?
Let's do it. Episode? It's Kolsch.
Kolsch is what we enjoyed during this episode. This is by Blaze Brewing Company. Looks like these guys are out of Bidford. Looks like, yeah, Bidford or Bidford, Maine. ME is Maine, right? Not Missouri.
That's right.
What's Missouri?
Missouri is MS. That's right. Yeah.
What's Mississippi?
Mississippi. No, Mississippi is MS.
Mississippi's MS.
Yeah.
Missouri is MO.
MO.
MO, yeah.
Which one's MI?
Michigan.
Michigan, that's right.
But yeah, what were your thoughts on this beer?
Okay, so my thoughts were that it was clean, it was reserved, but kind of a basic beer. Like, there wasn't much to write home about, but if you're just looking for, like, basic beer. This one was
classic,
like,
emergency drinking beer,
yeah,
kind of stuff.
A good example of it.
Yeah. This, I feel like the way this beer smelled was how I remember beer smelling as a kid. Like,
oh no, it wasn't that stinky.
Really?
I feel like the stankiness of,
no,
like,
not
my
the,
uncle's
not the
Budweiser.
But okay, just kind of like the classic nature of it.
Okay.
I mean, obviously, if you, when you drink something like this, I think a large part of what you're enjoying is the fact that you know that this is made by a few folks over in a specific brewery, compared to a whole factory of dudes working in a giant facility, one of those macro-produced beers,
uh-huh,
which, obviously, they can make good beers, and they employ a lot of people, but if you're looking for something...
We actually had a listener write in
like that
recently who brewed for,
oh, yeah,
Big Beer,
right,
for, like, decades and decades. Really cool guy. And so, they're great people in that space, too.
Absolutely.
Even if their beers aren't our favorites. And by the way, like, you know, you and I have talked about Miller High Life is...
Dude, I still drink.
Something we drink from time to time.
Especially at the beach. I mean...
So, you're
like
a beach guy.
At the beach,
I think of it when I go to see a show, but...
Oh, well, that's a perfectly opportune time to enjoy one of those beers as,
yeah,
well. But I mean, at the beach, man, squeeze some of that lime into that Bud Light.
Uh-huh.
I make my own Bud Light lime while I'm at the beach or after I cut the grass. But
go.
Most of the time, yes, well, I'm looking for something that's got a little more nuance.
And basic 3%, 4% beers, yeah, are really nice, especially during the summer. Something clean, refreshing is a good go in July, right?
Exactly. It definitely helps to quench the thirst, like I like to say, which you disagree with, but yes, be sure to look up Blaze Brewing Company if you happen to have access to this Kolsch.
All right, well, that's going to be it for this episode. Again, we would love to hear your question for an upcoming episode. Just go to howtomoney.com/ask and submit your voice question for us.
Yeah, specifically the weirder the better.
The weirder the better.
Like, I would love to have some more frugal versus cheaps, because
those
are the kind of questions where you get a bit more personality, and those are just so much fun because we kind of get to judge people and the decisions that they're making because this is like, why would you spend that kind of money on that?
Yeah.
While at the same time, we know that, hey, whatever, if that's what they want to spend their money on, you have all the freedom in the world to do that. No,
yeah,
judgment.
Frugal or cheaps
in reality
are fun. But yeah, really, we love to take a variety of questions here on the show. So if you have kind of something and you're like, I don't know if they'd answer that weird one. No. The weirder the better. So bring it on. And also, by the way,
variety is the spice.
Speaking of our website, if listeners haven't signed up for our email newsletter yet, it's rocking it. I'm telling you, it's fire every week. howtomoney.com/newsletter. It's free. Comes in your inbox on Tuesday mornings.
Tuesday morning,
so
first thing.
Sign up right now. You can get it tomorrow morning in your inbox.
That's right, buddy. That's going to be it for today. Until next time.
Best friends out.
Best friends out.
You know that feeling when you walk into your home, take a deep breath, and feel new? Well, that's what it's like to use Clorox Scentiva. Because Clorox Scentiva smells like coconut, cleans like Clorox, and feels like energy. It'll elevate any cleaning routine to not just clean, but also make every room smell like a tropical coconut getaway. Discover how Clorox Scentiva's powerful clean and refreshing scents can transform your space. Get yours in coconut or other fabulous scents at a nearby retail store.
There's a lot of pros to drinking Health Aid kombucha. No cons that I can think of. Pro, amazing taste. Pro, pairs well with anything. Pro, probiotic. That's a literal pro. And it's deliciously refreshing. It's the perfect pairing to your meal or great on its own, whether you're having Pink Lady Apple, Berry Lemonade, or one of the other great flavors. It's the perfect swap for soda or alcohol. Make it part of your daily routine. Look for the brown bottle with an anchor on it and try Health Aid Kombucha today.
Upswell Marketing would like to remind you that when customers choose your small business, they're really choosing you. So focus on super serving your existing customers and let Upswell handle the pipeline generation of new leads and customers.
Upswell specializes in developing customized direct response campaigns and is now offering a no-obligation free assessment of your current marketing strategies.
Not to mention, new customers also receive 15% off their first order when they mention that they heard about Upswell on this podcast. For more information, visit upswellmarketing.com. That's upswellmarketing.com.
You don't have to hop a plane to see the world. This month's Free This Week picks on Xfinity brings you around the globe. Experience life at a European resort in the hit comedic drama Seaside Hotel from Walter Presents. Watch romance blossom abroad in a Scottish love scheme from Hallmark Movies Channel. Celebrate Earth Month with planet-saving docuseries like EcoEye with Duncan Stewart on Magellan TV. And be transported to your happy place with iHeartRadio's Feeling Good playlist. Just say Free This Week into your Xfinity voice remote.